Hello, this is Rose Cuisan-Villazor, Interim Co-Dean of Rutgers Law School in Newark.
And I am Kim Mutcherson, Co-Dean of Rutgers Law School in Camden.
And this is The Power of Attorney.
So it's already a different episode because we've got both of us on here today. But it's going to be even more different because we are going to be the interviewees instead of the interviewers today. So I'm going to let our interviewers introduce themselves and get us started.
I can go first. Hi, I'm Delilah Hayden. I am the SBA president at Rutgers Law School in Newark.
Hi, I'm Caitlin Connell, and I'm the SBA president for Rutgers Law School in Camden.
Thanks for interviewing us.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. So fire away.
What made you decide to seek out the opportunity to be a law school dean? Was it something you always wanted to do?
So I'll go first. It definitely was not something I always wanted to do. I'm not even sure it was something that I wanted to do when I said yes to it, quite frankly. So I ended up becoming dean because I was the vice dean at a time when the person who was our dean got a new deanship and was going to be leaving, and the chancellor on the Camden campus asked me to step in as dean. So I became dean in January 2019. And I think the first conversation that I had with the chancellor about becoming dean was in November 2018. So I had a very, very short window of time, one, to decide that I was going to say yes, and then two, to sort of transition into the role. So it was not something that I sought out. It has been the most difficult professional experience of my life, but also incredibly rewarding.
Like Dean Mutcherson, I did not seek out the position of a deanship. I was also vice dean. I actually became vice dean near the same time that Dean Mutcherson became the dean. By December of 2018, Dean Lopez had announced that he had asked me to serve as the vice dean in Newark. And Dean Reed Wise's board at the time was finishing up his vice deanship. And so I started to shadow him in the spring of 2019, but I didn't start officially until July 2019. And being vice dean is something that I had thought about. Academic affairs dean, that's a normal type of administrative work that many law professors try to do or are interested in. I mean, it's something that I thought about before. And the reason why is because I wanted to be to have some say in the institution with respect to faculty affairs, you know, primarily looking at research support for them and then how to mentor junior faculty. And so I wanted to do that. And part of being vice dean meant being involved in that. But then 2 years later, Dean Lopez stepped down and the chancellor asked me in Newark to also to be the dean. It's different, though. In Newark, we wanted to do a national search. And so I agreed to serve as interim dean. And honestly, I don't know if I wanted to. It wasn't something that I wanted to commit to be a permanent dean anyway. And so having an interim deanship gave me the opportunity to really think about, is this what I want? Because being a dean is different from being vice dean in terms of scope of work, the hours that one engages in, the types of challenges that one faces as a dean, completely different from being a vice dean. And so that's how I got to where I am. And then after the first year of the interim deanship, or during that time, President Holloway had said that we were going to select one dean. And so then I stayed on. I was asked to stay on for a second year. And you know, the rest of the story, we're in the middle of the dean search, and Dean Mutcherson and I will both be stepping down at the same time.
That's amazing. And I think it's such, I don't know what the word is, amazing that you both, we have two strong leaders in Newark and Camden at the same time. I think that's amazing. And the fact it was practically fate is so interesting.
I mean, being a co-dean, that kind of relationship, it's unique in the academy. Most law schools have just one dean. There are, I think, only two other law schools that might have this same kind of structure. But what's unique about us is that we are in two locations, and some law schools that have a co-deanship, they're in the same, just one campus. Mm-hmm. And so being co-deans was different from what I imagined a dean would be. And it's been really a privilege to work closely with Dean Mutcherson. I've learned a lot from her, learned a lot from our from the work, the relationship that we've developed with each other and our colleagues. So it really has been a challenging but also rewarding experience.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay, I'll ask my question. Has being a dean affected, I guess, your career outside as a legal scholar or just as a legal professor? Because I know you both still do professor work, but do you think that being a dean has made you reflect on your work differently or treat it differently or just go about it with a new perspective?
I think that, I mean, one thing that I will definitely say about being a dean is that it has given me an enormous amount of appreciation for people who are deans. The amount of work that's involved, the amount of sort of politicking that's involved, the amount of anger that is directed towards you on a regular basis has all been really eye-opening and difficult in some circumstances. But I never stopped teaching. Rose never stopped teaching either. And I've always loved teaching. Teaching for me is the best part of this job, frankly. And it's been incredibly important for me to be able to still be in the classroom and to interact with students, not as the dean, but as a professor. Because that's, you know, that's the space where I feel like I am providing the most value, frankly, in the classroom. So that's been really great. And in terms of my scholarship, it's been very hard to keep that up while being a dean. And given the work that I do, right, I'm a reproductive justice scholar, and the world has basically blown up for those of us who do this work. So particularly since last year, I've been working really hard to try to find spaces where I can still do that work because it's so critical right now. So there's definitely a part of me that's looking forward to, you know, July 1, 2023, when I can sort of leap back into doing that work more consistently.
Yeah, writing as a dean, researching and writing, both are super challenging while one is in an administrative role. It's been really hard to research and write. And I publish. I was part of a book project, and like Dean Mutcherson was able to publish too. But I think that actually getting the work done it made it so much harder, because then I'd have to wake up even earlier than I needed to, or stay up later, because once I'm in the office, then it's all dean work. You know, my calendar is just booked. Before I became a dean, I controlled my own calendar. And then when I became the dean, three other people had access to my calendar, and I would wake up and I'll just see a bunch of different meetings scheduled and think, oh, there goes my writing time. And so a lot of researching and writing happens early in the morning or late at night. And in my work, I write on critical race theory. And so, as you know, in the past few years, there's been a lot of pushback and politicization of CRT. And so I've been wanting to be much more active in researching and writing that area, but I have not been to the extent that I want. And so that's been part of the challenge. And, you know, there's some things you have to give up once in a while when you're a dean, when you're serving in an administrative capacity. And so research and writing, I've slowed down in my writing. And I, like Dean Mutcherson, I'm looking forward to July 1st and go back to some articles that I've kind of set aside, and a book project that I've ignored. As for teaching, it is one of those passion that I couldn't give up. I mean, if there was one thing I did not want to give up, it's teaching. Being in the classroom gives me that kind of joy that I love. That's what I love about being a professor, to actually interact with students and be able to mentor them. As hard as it is, it's so hard teaching, prepping for class, and being really being present for students. But I do it because I love teaching and making sure that I'm still there for students while I'm in this role.
You know what I wanted to add, Rose, because I was thinking about, so when you become a dean, we call it baby dean school. So like in the summer, there's a meeting that the Association of American Law Schools does, and we all sort of get together and, you know, we talk to people who are already deans, and they give us advice and everything. And I remember when I went to baby dean school, one of the conversations was about, when do you sort of speak out as a dean, right? When do you sort of talk about, you know, what might be potentially controversial issues? And there was a more senior dean there who said, I only ever talk about things if it's, you know, squarely in my wheelhouse, sort of in a scholarly sense. And if it's something that's like so huge that you can't not talk about it, otherwise I will not engage in any discussions sort of about what's going on in the world. And I remember in that moment being like, well, that's not how I'm going to be, right? Like, that's just, I can't even imagine having to sort of put aside all the other sorts of things that I care about as part of being a dean. And I think that's one of the things that Rose and I have both been very clear on, that there are things that matter to us, there are things that are important to us, and that we're still going to talk about those things and have conversations and say things that are potentially, you know, controversial, because being a dean doesn't mean that you have to stop being a person who cares mm-hmm. about things in the world.
I have chosen to limit my the things that I would sign on to, because I recognize, even in my personal capacity, when they Google me, they'll see that I'm the interim dean, and I don't ever want to ascribe my views onto my personal views onto the institution. So I have, with exception of immigration. When it's immigration, then I'm all in, and I put my name out there. But on other things that I would have signed on to as a law professor, I've chosen in the last 4 years to not be as open about them. And I, you know, when I go back to the faculty, I will go back to my normal things of signing on to anything that I think is my name helps to, or my signature helps to lengthen the number of support for a particular cause.
That's really insightful to hear. For me personally, I I'm very anxious for July 1st, 2023, because I'll be studying for the bar. Otherwise, I'm really excited for both of you. I mean, like, Dean CV, it's been great seeing you and how much you've done for the school. And, like, I've had, like, two different deans, which is nice in my 3 years here. But I think that being president and, like, serving with you and connecting with you has been extremely rewarding, because you do a lot for the school that no one, like, always sees every day. And I think it's especially, like, as a woman of color, it's like, not only are you a dean who's like, oh, like, I'm working, I'm a professor, but it's also like you're a representative in a way of like, this is what women of color can do. This is what we can aspire to do. Even if you didn't directly do the application and search and things for the deanship, I think that you both have done a great job. And I'm excited to see your academia in the future. Like, I love reading on CRT and reproductive justice and changes. And that's still a huge topic. So good things you haven't missed out on everything. So that's really good.
Well, Delilah, it's been great working with you, because I got to know you when you were still a 1L, yeah. Right? You ended up, there were some changes within the SBA that led you to step up. And yeah. So in Newark, it's a story. I think it's a theme that I'm seeing here. Caitlin, I don't know if you chose to run for SBA initially, but Delilah was sort of, she was just going to be one of the, what were you, recording secretary or?
Yeah, well, I became president in 2L, but it was still like right the beginning of 2L year.
Yeah.
So it was essentially yeah. like half my school career has been being president of SBA, which is very
weird. Yeah, and then you chose to serve again in your third year. I mean, you really could have just stepped back and said, oh, you know, I've done my time. 2 years, and then you continue to stay on. And I think that says a lot about the kind of, you know, your service to the community, which, as you both know, being in this position, leadership position, it's not easy. There's so many stakeholders, and you represent a position that can't, that has to contend with various tensions and conflicts. And you really have to figure out a way to navigate those different demands, right, from various individuals and groups.
Yeah. Yes, it's very true. So I'm sure, like Delilah said, you're very excited for July 1st. Delilah and I would like to go backwards in time. And I really respect and admire how you both stayed true to what it seems like your passion was before becoming a dean, which was being educators first and foremost. But is there anything else you can think of throughout your experience as being the deans of the co-deans of Rutgers Law that has also been very personally rewarding?
Okay. Well, there are a lot of things about being a dean and then vice dean. I count just four years of service that I feel really good about. And a lot of this work is invisible. You know, we're not going to send out a press release about these things, but I feel good about them. So, and I could talk about it from the student, you know, students and then faculty and then staff. For students, I was committed to making sure that there were more courses, particularly on immigration and race. And with that also came alongside the time that the faculty issued a resolution in support of Black Lives Matter, the movement, and then in recommitting ourselves to be an anti-racist institution. So that aligned with my vision of making sure that we had more courses on not only CRT, but other race-related courses, but also just courses in general that opened up our understanding of the development of the law from various perspectives, gender, disability, immigration status. So I was committed to that as a vice dean. And then related to that, I really wanted to work hard on student experience and thinking of how technology could help that make better student life. And here I'm talking about in Newark, because we in Newark have not, you know, talking about limited resources, we haven't had as many resources on our end to make sure that we had the right technology so that students can check their grades easily or can move between different courses much more easily than others. And so it's still an ongoing project, but it just takes so long to get us up to speed on that. And so I'm glad to see that with Dean LaShawnek's entry to the law school, that she has taken that on. And it's she's pushing for that, which I'm grateful for. So that's for students. For faculty, we don't have a lot of research funds for faculty to do their research. And my goal has been to explore how else can we, what are some endowments that we have not used, or what are some other opportunities that we can rely upon so that we can increase the pot of research money for faculty. And Dean Mutchison knows, I sometimes sound like a broken record. We need to raise more money for faculty scholarship, because I came from three other institutions before here. And in those institutions, I just saw and experienced more resources for faculty support. And so it's amazing to me that our faculty have continued to research and write, given the limited resources that we have. And so I admire the faculty so much for their drive and their commitment to publishing. And then for faculty and then staff, some of the invisible work really has to do with equity pay. There's been, and I obviously can't say too much about it, but there are, I was committed to figuring out how in my position I can help increase salary equity of some faculty members and some staff members, because it was the right thing to do and it was time. It's, some of our the inequities needed to be fully addressed, and there's commitment in all university leadership, but we just needed to figure out how to go about doing that. And so I feel good about having made a difference in that space in equity pay.
So I agree with Rose. There are so many things that happen behind the scenes that people never see, and there are lots of sort of little things like that. But I would say that the big things that I really am proud of to sort of think about leaving at the law school. One is that we started the law and inequality class. It's not mandatory yet, but I think that we're getting there. And I've taught that class for the last 2 years, and it's just I think it's a really wonderful addition to the first year curriculum. And it's sort of weird that we don't have any sort of elective in the first year. A lot of law schools have made that change. Some of them, I had electives in the first year when I was in law school, which was quite some time ago. So we've got some work to do there, but I'm really proud of that class, and I'm proud of making it available to students. I'm also really proud of some of the hires that we've made in terms of faculty over the last couple of years. One of the biggest legacies that a dean can leave is faculty. Who you hire is really meaningful. And we haven't always been as successful as I would like in terms of diversifying, particularly racially diversifying the faculty in Camden, but the work continues. So I'm very happy about that work that we've done. I am thrilled that we now have an Innocence Project in New Jersey that is based at Rutgers Law School. I could not be prouder of the work that went into that. And that was a journey. But I feel like we're really on an upswing with that work right now. And I think that it is going to, it's literally going to be life-changing for people. And I just feel great about that. And then the last thing is this process that we created to allow our non-tenure track faculty to move onto the tenure track, which sounds like a very, which doesn't necessarily make sense, right? When you just say it like that, like who cares? But part of why it's so important is that often non-tenure track faculty, so your LAWR faculty, clinical faculty in lots of institutions, don't have the benefits of tenure, right? So they don't have the kind of job security. They often aren't paid as well as other people. And they tend to be parts of the law school where there are lots of women and people of color, right? So it's this way of sort of segmenting off part of your faculty, and then frankly, treating them as second-class citizens. So the fact that we were able to first get the faculty to sign on to the idea that we should have this path, and then literally take it up through the entire university, it had to go up to the president in order to get approval for this plan. And then this year we have our first people who have gone from non-tenure track to tenure track and who've gotten positive votes from the faculty for tenure and promotion. So I could not be prouder of that work. And that was definitely, that was a little bit of an uphill battle, but we got there. And I think it's deeply meaningful for the law school. It's really about, it is an opportunity to live your principles. And I'm glad that we're able to do that.
Yeah, I second that. So that part of what I was saying about equity has to do with what Dean Mutchison said, because it's not easy trying to push forward a initiative like transferring some faculty who've been here for a long time from non-tenure track to tenure track. But we were able to push for that at the university level and get some resources that we needed for them, and then continue to provide support for them. So I'm so proud of that. And then yes, in terms of hiring, we've been really lucky in the last few years that we've been able to hire amazing scholars and who are diverse, people of color. And that's true. It's one of the dean's lasting legacies. You walk away, and I can say that when I stepped down, I've been able to hire 7 people and was able to retain 2 people. I lost some, unfortunately, to other schools, but we were able to also bring in some. And that makes me feel really good about the service that I've provided to the law school.
That's amazing. It's so great to hear you both reflect on your time at Rutgers. And I can say as a student, we've really felt a lot of the effects. I know when you're talking about expanding the classes, one class I took last fall when I was a 2L was Professor Iyer's Sexuality, Gender, and the Law class. I learned so much. I sat in that class twice a week and I just ate up everything she said. I learned so much and it carried on to so many other classes. Like I took family law this fall and I think it'll help so much with the bar too, but it was also so personally interesting and enriching. And it was just a great class. And it just shows how offering, so many different kinds of classes like that really does benefit the students.
Oh, good. Yay.
Yeah, that's cool. I took a similar class last fall. Caitlin, that's really funny. I took it with Professor Ball. It was the same class, gender, sexuality, and law, Professor Ball. Mm-hmm. I also took law and inequality, though, last spring, and that was one of my favorite classes I've taken here so far. I took the mm-hmm. professionalism class with Professor Soled and Professor Valverde, and I loved that. That was really amazing and very great to just have discussions with people of all class years. So that was really nice. It definitely should be.
Yeah.
It's a class everyone should take if you can. Well, if you're a 1L, you will, but otherwise, yeah. another question is, what did working together mean to you both? Like, I guess, like, what did having each other, how did that help you? What did that mean? And how could other people learn from your partnership together?
Oh, goodness. I mean, we could talk so long, a lot about that. So one thing, both Kim and I have, we laugh a lot. So it's, I think part of it, you have to laugh. The job is challenging, but also just our, in terms of our, you know, appreciation for humor, we're kind of aligned in that way. And so that, I think, has helped the relationship. Collaboration means being true partners, in my view. I mean, we really have to have mutual respect for each other's views, even if we don't agree with each other, which we actually don't always agree. It's on the outside, we try to present a unified front, and we're, you know, we, by the time we've presented some of our ideas, we've gone through the process of working through some of our differences of opinions, and then so that when we present our views to students or to faculty, we you know, we're unified, right? That was important to us when we started together. So I'll start there, and then Kim, feel free to just jump in.
You know, one of the things that we will often hear from deans when we go to, you know, dean gatherings is how lonely this job can be. And so on one hand, you can imagine that a co-deanship could be frustrating or difficult because you have to kind of, you know, work with another person. And if your personalities don't fit, like, that could be a huge, huge problem. But one of the things that's been so perfect about this job is that I've been able to work with Rose. I mean, it's just been a really extraordinary experience. And it has made it a job that wasn't lonely, right? Because we have each other and we, you know, are in the same environment. And can commiserate with each other and can share stories with each other and can bounce ideas off of each other. And that's just been really critical. And I also think that it helps that we are both women and both women of color. And I think we, you know, both have experienced even in a law school that considers itself to be pretty left and, you know, probably progressive. We've definitely experienced things that I would say have both a race and gender component to them in ways that we have been treated. From you know, a variety of different stakeholders. And it's nice to be able to have somebody who you can talk to about that and not have that person say, oh, you're probably just making it up, or, you know, that could sort of gaslighting that I think can often happen when people don't share your identities. And we've really been able to support each other in that, in ways that I think I will always, always, always be grateful for. And the other thing that's been really great for us is that we are deaning at a time when the deans in this country are more diverse than they've ever been. Certainly in terms of gender, we have tons of women deans out there now. And there's also this just great collective of women of color deans. And we have a listserv and we have text threads and, you know, all of this stuff going on. And it is hands down, that group of women law deans is the most supportive professional community I have ever been a part of. I mean, just absolutely extraordinary to have access to people like that. That's just been such a gift. I would not have made it through this deanship without Rose and without that community of people.
Oh yeah, same here. Question. Definitely. You feel that there, you know, people are backing you up, because it's not always the case. I mean, as a dean, you can get your ask of many things from students, rightly so, from faculty, rightly so, and staff, right? Same thing. I mean, there are alumni, multiple stakeholders, and you have to, and it's appropriate and completely reasonable for a dean to, it's our job to listen. But then whether we can give what they're asking for is a different story, is a different response. And so there are many challenges to being a dean, and then to add on the layer of gender and race. I mean, it's some of the, you can maybe imagine some of the stereotypes against Black women, and then stereotypes against Asian American women. So I am sometimes thought of as, oh, you know, she's submissive. And then Dean Mutcherson is the bully. And then you think, my gosh, I mean, is that really the case? That if they only knew what it's like behind doors, closed doors, and Dean Hawkins and Dean Gassefa are there with Dean Young and Dean Chase, and then we're all talking and trying to work through some things together. There's a lot of collaboration and compromises and conflicts that happened. But on the outside, you know, there are these stereotypes, really unfortunate stereotypes that are lodged against us, which has made me sad. It's part of the sad part about being a dean, because you recognize, gosh, they're, you know, despite what you do sometimes, they're just those racial stereotypes and gender stereotypes are still thrown at your face. And you have to present this really, oh my gosh, my voice is cracking. But, you know, you can't help but be emotional. Now here I am, the woman being emotional. But it's about, you know, you have to, as a leader, you know, you got to take it all in stride, right? You let it roll off your back, and you stand in front of everybody, and then you smile, and then you're a strong person. I'm sure, as I imagine, Caitlin and Delilah, you've had, I mean, can you think of examples? I'm going to flip it a little bit right now. Can you think of examples where that has happened to you, where you've had to, you know, the strong SBA president, despite maybe some of the, I don't know, stereotypes that might be thought of about you?
Yeah, I mean, I can start with that. I came into being president the first time because I was, I hate to say this, but in my 2L year, I just wanted to lay low. I was president of my sorority in college. And then was it my 2L year, a lot of the 3Ls were like, you should run, you'd be great, like blah, blah, blah. And I was close to the other president. And I very much was like, I don't want to do this. Everyone knew me at school as like a very nice person, a peacemaker, like, oh, you'd be great for this. And so like when I first joined, it was great, but it was also very hard because our SBA at the time there's a lot of like tension in it. So a lot of it was very much like, I was on the side of the tension at first. And so getting to the role of president, there was a lot of like, some people were very happy. They're like, oh, this person's great. She's so welcoming. Everyone loves her. It's great. But on the other side, I'm like, there is a tension. But also whenever, as like a person of color, I think about, oh, people not liking me or being frustrated with me, is it because of me as a person, or is it because of my identity, of how I'm perceived by other people? So I feel like there's always that question still of like, if people don't like what I'm doing or people don't like me, is it just because I'm doing badly? Or is it because they're like, oh, she was set up, like she's always going to be bad. I always had this idea in my head because of who she is, like forget her lower whatever standards. But I think like over the past year in a way, I've seen a lot more, I think, not just diversity in SBA, but also inclusivity. And so I think for myself, like to kind of combat troubles I've had, I've tried especially to have the 1Ls who are there now. And like a lot of the 2Ls have stepped up, which is great. So I don't need to really worry about some of them. But I've tried to have a lot of the 1Ls, especially 1Ls of color or female 1Ls, like have positions. So right now we have a 1L female Haitian girl who is making and running our judicial panel for this year, which is an amazing opportunity for her. And she's an amazing girl. She's amazing. And we have other 1Ls who are stepping up to do a fundraiser for Syria. And I think they raised over $600 or $700, like with 2 days of bake sales in just 1 week. And so it's really nice to see, like, there are many people who are discrediting me because of my identity, but at least I know personally that I myself am putting in the work to be like, you know what, you can say anything you want about me, but at least I'm giving people the opportunity so they can shine their light and so they can do so much good for the school community.
I think Delilah and I maybe had different experiences because, the president before me was Ashley. She's been so supportive of me since my 1L year. We're very good friends. I could call her right now if I had a question. And then my vice president right now, Hannah, we've become very good friends. And, you know, I'm always here for her, you know, when she was like going through interviews for 1L and 2L summers. And so having that really supportive community, and even, you know, Ashley graduated and I can still go to her for advice, even if it is about SBA. But I think the biggest struggle for me is people from the outside always saying, what does the SBA do? The SBA doesn't do anything for us. It's like, it can't be the only eyes and ears. People need to come to me, come to the meetings, and also participate and, you know, let us know of broader issues. Because I always think of this saying, it's like, we're all in the same ocean, but we're all in different ships. We're all having different experiences. And I don't have the same experience as everyone else. So I don't know everything. And I remember a lot when we were working really hard on the credit requirement, you know, you had so many voices coming at you. And I felt like my e-board and I really had to keep our head down and try to solve it, you know, the best and, you know, most respectful way that we could, and trying to tune out the noise because we want to help everyone. And it's really hard when you feel like you're being criticized, even though you think you're doing the right thing.
And I definitely agree with that, Caitlin. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a universal. Yep. That is a universal experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
You always have those moments where you're like, well, why don't you do it then? Right? If it's so easy to make everything perfect, why don't you step up and do it? Right?
But you know, there's a flip side to this too, in that, so we're 4 women and we're leading institutions, and then you kind of have to think, gosh, well, you can't always have women do the work, right? You want to make sure that the work is equalized across various spectrum. And so on the one hand, we want to promote women into leadership positions, but you also want to make sure that we're not the only ones doing the work. Others have to take up the mantle and be in charge of committees and help shepherd different initiatives. So I've had to find that balance of making sure that there's enough representation in different committees and other forms of programs and initiatives that we have, and just making sure that women, and particularly women of color, are not the ones doing the invisible work, especially when, as Kim mentioned, here at the law school and the faculty end, and I would think also the staff end, because of the way that we've had differences in statuses, non-tenure track versus tenure track, that we've had unequal pay and unequal workloads. And so that has been, you know, that's the forefront of how Kim and I have really tried to lead the school in terms of, okay, what does equity look like in this particular, I don't know, in this area, such as assignment of committees, or who's going to lead the charge in a bar pass initiative, you know, who's going to be part of that?
Yes, definitely a unique experience, to say the least. So now that you have both very, very successfully checked law school dean off the list come July 1st, what is both of your next chapters going to look like?
Well, funnily enough, we're both on sabbatical next year. We both have a year long sabbatical next year, and we have plans to travel together. Mm-hmm. To celebrate the work that we've done. And then we're both going to be visiting at the Birnbaum Women's Leadership Center at NYU. So we cannot get away from each other. We are insisting upon continuing to work together. So we'll both be there doing some work next year. And, you know, as I said in the beginning, most of what I'm really focused on is just trying to get back into the swing of, so, you know, I always describe myself as an academic activist, right? So I'm not a person who thinks of being a law professor as, you know, my job is just to sort of talk to other law professors. You know, my job is to really think about how I can use the power and the privilege of my role and this institution to do good things in the world. Right? I mean, I became a lawyer because I wanted to be a public interest lawyer. So I still care very deeply about being a person who feels, you know, on a regular basis, I say to myself, what have you done today to make the world a better place? Which is a lot of pressure to put on oneself. But so, you know, I really want to be able to, you know, work with some of the folks who are working with the legislature in New Jersey, you know, work with some of the folks who are doing litigation in states that have abortion bans right now, you know, just sort of creating opportunities to be of use. And being a dean is certainly being of use, but it's being of use in a sort of insular way. And so I want to be able to be back out in the world again.
I direct a center on immigration law and policy, but the last couple of years I have not been as active in the center. I'm so grateful that Professor Shawnee King had agreed to co-direct the center, and he and our program coordinator Habiba Johnson have been really doing such a great job of introducing different programming, inviting guest lecturers so that the center can still provide the kind of interdisciplinary work and research that is designed for. So I'm going to go back to that when I return to the faculty and during my sabbatical, I'll start doing research. Much more involved research with Professor King and some of our visiting fellows in the center. And that work requires many things: writing policy papers. I've also testified before the New Jersey Legislature and Congress on issues that relate to the center's work. And so I'm eager to go back to that. And there are some things too. When I reflect on the deanship, there are many things that we did that. I wonder what the how it transfers to other work. So for example, deaning during the pandemic, I mean, talk about crisis management, right? Crisis leadership for about 2 years. That taught me so many things about resilience and how to manage competing interests and the limited resources, how to be much more empathetic to students and faculty and staff who are dealing with so much. I mean, there's just so much to be learned from the pandemic and crisis leadership. So it's gonna take me some time to truly reflect and learn from that. And I'd love to be able to write about it. Dee Mutchison and I talk about co-writing something, but there's just no time right now. Other than we co-write a lot. We have statements or, you know, when we send out messages to students, those are co-written and there's a lot of back and forth and changing here and there. And so I'm looking forward to reflecting on the experience of being a dean during these really difficult, challenging times of the pandemic, plus the racial reckoning that we went through. And, you know, what did that mean in terms of the legal curriculum that we wanted to develop at the law school? So I'm looking forward to thinking much more deeply about what I've learned in in during those crises moments in all over the country, but particularly as a dean in a law school.
That's great. And I really look forward to and hope you both will be able to find the time someday to co-write something, because I think that would be absolutely remarkable. And something I feel like we've touched on a lot during the interview, like this theme of like getting back to your roots. And it makes me think about, and I don't know, Delilah, if you think about this too, always having to remind yourself like why we came to law school, because once you're here, it just seems like there's so many different paths and doors to open, and it can become quite overwhelming.
Yeah, no, I definitely feel that, especially in 3L. I'm like, okay, let's remember what happened 3 years ago or whenever it was. I guess for me, it was 4 years ago because I deferred. But what was I thinking when I first applied? Yeah, it's definitely hard sometimes. So I guess this month, or at least from the New Jersey Women's Law Association, you'll be receiving the Trailblazer Award together, which is very exciting. Congratulations. So in that, like, how do you feel about receiving it, especially like together, I guess, like, how does that make you feel to know that you weren't just a trailblazer in your field, but also you both were like in this position, like no one has done what you both did and no one is either of you. How do you feel about all that as you're winding down in your time?
It's actually a pretty weird feeling. So when I became dean, like I said, it was a very sort of fast process, right? As they were sort of preparing to make the announcement that I was going to be the next dean, you know, there was like a press release, and you know, I was the first woman, the first Black person, or really the first person of color, and the first queer person to be dean at Rutgers Law School in Camden. And so they did this like press release and all this stuff, and it was a much bigger deal than I thought it would be. And just like random, you know, random people on campus would stop me and be like, oh, you're the new dean at the law school. Congratulations. And, you know, I always tell this story, the kindergarten teacher who taught me how to read sent me an email congratulating me because there was like stuff in the newspaper. I mean, it was sort of ridiculous. And so on one hand, I felt like, wow, this is really great, right? Because I do believe very deeply that representation matters, and that it's very hard to become something when you've never seen it in front of you. And so I value the fact that I've been able to be that for people. You know, and I love it when I, you know, go talk in an event or something, and often a Black woman who's a law student will come up to me afterwards and be like, can I just give you a hug? I'm so happy that you're here. You know, I love those moments. But I also think that there are significant pressures that come along with being somebody who's a trailblazer. You know, people treat you differently. People see the role differently when the person who's sitting in the dean suite looks different than everybody else who has ever been in that dean suite. You have sort of weird, like small things. Like one of the things that I've talked about with my friends a lot is that like alumni and donors will be much more physical with me than I've ever seen them be with the male deans before me, right? So they don't necessarily put out their hand to shake my hand. They'll give me hugs. I mean, I'm a hugger, so I can handle that. But it's like, I've been at this school for over 20 years. I have never seen you hug a dean before, and yet you see me, and that's like the first thing you do, right? So there's sort of interesting things like that that you have to kind of make sense of and wrap your head around. But I always, you know, I really think of this role. I'm a very big quote person, and I have this quote from Ayanna Pressley that's up in my office, and I'm not sitting in my office right now, so I'm not going to say it perfectly. But basically what she said is, you know, I'm not here just to take up space. I'm here to create it. And that's really how I have thought about this job and what I want to leave behind and what I want to be able to create while I'm here. Because I think that I just bring a really different perspective than literally everybody who has had this job before me. And I want to be able to value that and to honor that. And I feel like I've been able to do that over the last, you know, 4.5 years or so. And that part of that has been being able to work with Rose and have this really valuable both working relationship and friendship. So the fact that we get to receive this award together really just makes it that much richer, that much more fabulous.
I echo what Dee Mutchison said. I mean, I feel so honored that we are both getting this award, and that I'm glad that we're getting it together. There is something about being first, right? So on the Newark side, I'm the first woman law dean at the law school in Newark, and I'm the first Asian American woman dean here, and the first Filipino American dean in the country. And that was the one that I think I would get emails from people about that. And like right away, the same. I grew up in a small island. I was born in the Philippines, but I grew up in a small island. And then as soon as people heard, it's like made the news, island girl becomes dean of a law school. It's like, you know. And then one of the reporters there asked if we could do a Zoom interview, and you know, hours later on Facebook. It was all over Facebook. And I think it was, and I had my former high school teacher reach out, two of them actually said, we're so proud of you. And there's something about being the first that is important to many because representation does matter. But what I think about in this position is that we can't be the last, right? You open the door, you help to open the door, but then you leave the door open so other people can come through. And then you let them shine, you do what you can so that they can come through the door. And I really took that to heart in this position. So I feel really good about the Trailblazer Award. I mean, I was surprised. We were both surprised when we got the email. It's not something that we expected. I went to last year's gala and wow, I mean, that room is so big. And there's just all these lawyers all from New Jersey who showed up for all the other Trailblazer awardees last year. And it was impressive. And then to think that Dean Mutchison and I will be up there too, I mean, I'm really humbled that it has happened. So, and then we get to, are we going to be twinning, right? We decided we're going to be twinning then.
Yeah, yeah. I believe that we should wear the same outfit.
Okay. They can't tell us apart.
We'll see how it goes. Yeah.
We are the shortest deans in the country.
The shortest deans in the country.
We are. That's the other thing about us.
Even when you stack us up, we might still be the shortest deans.
No.
We are small but mighty.
That's right.
Yes, definitely.
That's very funny. Thank you for answering that.
I can do more of like a fun question.
Yeah.
That one, the Trailblazer one, wasn't fun. That one was very fun, but no more tough ones.
Okay.
What was your favorite and least favorite classes when you were both law students?
Oh, I hated property.
And me too.
Oh,
I hated property.
I could not stand property. It was year long. I went to school at American University, Washington College of Law. Loved it. I would not trade my law school experience for anything. But 1L year, property was year long, and I hated it to my core. And then my 3L year, I did clinic. It was landlord tenant clinic. And then I fell in love with property. I saw the power of property law and in creating access to people of color, how you can use other laws to break down these old archaic property laws to try to make sure to remove barriers in ongoing discrimination in property law. So then it took my 3L year to finally understand and have deep appreciation for property. Yeah, but I hated it.
What was your favorite? So the clinic was your favorite?
No, I mean, I like clinic too, but so much work, year-long clinic. I love the seminar that my professor taught, Asian Americans in the Law. It was one of the first in the country. It was taught by Letty Volpe, for whom I was her research assistant. And at the end of that semester, I was her RA and I took her class. And I wrote a paper that got published at UCLA. And she said, you know, Rose, you should think about going into law teaching. And it wasn't until then that I thought about it. And, you know, I'm first in my family to go to college, to go to law school. No one is a professor in my family or a lawyer. And then she, you know, she was one of the few women of color, you know, professors of color at AU, a very progressive school, right? But still. And even though I saw she's Asian American, and I still didn't see myself as a professor until she had to tell me that. And so I think for me, that's my favorite class because it inspired the work that I do now, my research in immigration and citizenship and critical race theory, but also because it's what led me to, it's the beginning of how I got to where I am.
I love that. So like Rose, I hated property. I hated everything about it. I hated being in the classroom. I didn't like the professor. I didn't like the book. I could not with property. And in terms of favorite classes, I'm going to cheat a little bit because I have a few. My clinic was amazing. I did a clinic called the Prisoners and Families Clinic, and we represented women who were incarcerated who had family law issues. And one of the clients that my partner and I worked with was a woman who was incarcerated at Bedford Hills Correctional Facility in New York, and she was losing parental rights. And we had to at one point go and visit her at the prison and basically say to her, you know, we've been through the whole record, you're going to lose, essentially. And we're like, you know, 20 something law students, neither one of us has kids, and like sitting in this room, you know, in the prison and saying, and that will never, ever forget that. And sort of the power of that and the power of being at that time, a future lawyer, and sort of literally having such a critical part of somebody's life in your hands and not being able to do what you wanted to do for them. I also took a class that was was a seminar, and it was sort of like a gender, law, and sexuality class. But it was taught by Kendall Thomas, who's a Black gay man. This was at Columbia when I was in law school there, and he's still fantastic, and I love him to death. And then it was co-taught by Evan Wolfson. And Evan Wolfson at the time, I think he might have still been at Lambda Legal at the time, but he ended up creating an organization called Freedom to Marry, which was completely a huge part of getting us to Obergefell. But this was in the mid to late 90s when I was in law school. And they would just have these really great, you know, so Evan was like the activist and Kendall was sort of more the theoretical person. And we would sit in class sometimes and just the two of them would go back and forth, and just watching them do that and just like hearing these super smart people and sort of thinking about, you know, how do you translate what's going on in the classroom into activism, which is what Evan was doing and ultimately was successful so many years later. That was very, very cool. And then I took a civil rights class with Kim Crenshaw, inventor of intersectionality, or at least the term intersectionality. And that was a really great class. And she had gone to law school with Brian Stevenson, and she had him come in and do a guest lecture one time, you know, talking about his work and, you know, death penalty abolition and all this great stuff. And I just remember, you know, walking up to him after class, and he just had told these really powerful stories, and I'm introducing myself and I'm just bawling, you know, and just, you know, that reminder of what a law degree can do, right? So law can fail us in so many ways, right? Which is why we have all of these people on death row, too many of whom should not be there, not only because the death penalty is deeply racist, but also because they didn't do the things that they're accused of doing. And, you know, seeing this person who had just committed his life to the work that he is still doing was just so deeply, deeply inspirational. And that, you know, that was definitely one of those moments, right? You're saying you have these moments where you have to remind yourself, why did I go to law school? Brian Stevenson reminded me why I went to law school, hands down.
I love that.
Yeah, he's amazing. Mm-hmm. Absolutely amazing.
It is amazing.
I feel like there's always that, you know, that one or two, a few professors who always, I feel like I can think of some of my friends and even myself really helped, you know, get you on your path or change the course and, you know, really make you believe what you want to do is possible.
Yeah. And that kind of goes back to what, we, you know, what Rose and I both said, right, which is being in the classroom, interacting with students, being a mentor, being a friend, being a support system. You know, that's the part of the job that I certainly missed the most, and I think Rose did too, as dean, because you don't get to have those kinds of interactions as much as you do when you're you know, teaching a full load.
We've had other interactions too.
Students. Absolutely.
I mean, outside the classroom, and not always pleasant ones, right? And and I say this coming from a place of I think it's right for students to challenge, to critique. The administration, to critique professors, it's their job. I mean, and we need to listen and pay attention. And as I think about the last few years where there are different conversations with students about either the curriculum or things that happen in the classroom, then you know that it's that students are asking for something that they really care about. And our job as deans is to listen and again, going back to the how do you manage different stakeholders and negotiate those conflicts. And so there's a lot of lesson to be learned from the relationships developed with students, whether in the classroom or outside.
Yeah. I also, the thing that I will add to that, though, is I think that there's also a part of it where, particularly because you all are law students, where we also want you to be learning how to be good advocates for yourselves, right? What's the best way to open a conversation with somebody who you want to do something for you? And I can assure you, it's not a list of demands. That is never the best way to open a conversation. And so one of the things that I've actually found a little frustrating is, you know, not always being able to say to students, I wish you had done this a different way, or I think you would have been more successful if. You know, those are sort of frustrating moments, because there are things that I would have said if I was a professor, but I won't say as dean. So, you know, some people might be getting emails from me on July 1st being like, I wanted to say this to you 2.5 years ago, but I'm gonna say it to you now. Well, thank you all so much. This was really a fun conversation, and we know that, you know, you've got lots of stuff going on. So we appreciate that you're willing to take the time to come and talk with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Caitlin and Delilah.
Thank you for having us.
This is great.
Yes, thank you for having us, and congratulations on your Trailblazer Award. It's so exciting, and good luck as you finish up your last few months as our co-deans.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Power of Attorney is produced by Rutgers Law School.
With 2 locations minutes from Philadelphia and New York City, Rutgers Law offers the prestige and reputation of a large, nationally known university with a personal, small campus experience.
Learn more by visiting law.rutgers.edu.